We'll take a look at how the Country Women's Association is making itself relevant to modern professional women. We're talking wine and quiche, not tea and scones. We'll learn about heritage pig breeds and their sweetmeat, and visit two boutique food businesses. Tracy and Peter Hinner have their own small coffee plantation on Queensland's Sunshine Coast, while Barry Lillywhites opened his own cheese factory in the Riverina.
Our cheese, we nurture it from when we go out and pick up that milk, all the way through pumping into our raw milk vat, pasteurising it, and then turning into cheese. That cheese is nurtured through the whole process, and it's loved through the whole process.
Coolerman cheeses made with love from local Riverina milk. That story coming up later, but let's start our travels today in inner city Brisbane, home to one of the CWA's newest branches.
Honour to God, loyalty to the throne, service to the country, through country women, for country women, by country women.
And the creed?
It's a tradition as old as the Country Women's Association itself. Members standing and reciting the oath at the start of their branch meeting. But this gathering is a little different. For a start, the meeting's at night, there's wine and quiche, not tea and scones spread out before us.
It's mostly working women, and they either work in the city or close by, and this is a convenient time for them to come direct from work and network and just relax. If you have a busy day at work, you don't want to come and have a lot of stress at night, so they do have a lot of fun.
Hello, I'm Jessica Hinchliffe, and welcome to the Brisbane City Nights branch meeting of the CWA. The group's been formed to meet the needs of inner city, mostly professional women, who would otherwise be unable to make regular daytime meetings. Christine King is the president of the CWA in Queensland. She says it's all about making the association relevant and appealing to younger people.
It's a different vibe because this is more older working women and some young, and there's a real mixture between cooks and crafty people, domestic science teachers, solicitors, everything's here. We have to go with the modern world that lots more women are working, maybe not full-time but part-time, or they have day commitments with either looking after grandchildren or working from home with their own business, and they just want that night out to escape. Well, escape to the CWA.
Caroline McDermott and Kylie Clark are both young, inner-city professionals. They've joined the group since moving to Brisbane.
I actually saw a show about the CWA. I think it was on Compass. And I thought to myself, you know, that's sort of got, it's a women's group, but it's got a bit of gravitas as well. That, you know, they've got opinions and ideas. They're not afraid to get involved in politics or the community. But also the focus is friendship and women supporting each other. And, you know, women are still, you know, in the community, we're still trying to get there on certain issues. So we need to come together and be strong, I think.
I went to an all-women's uni in the US, and I went to my reunion about 2 years ago, and it reminded me how much I actually really loved that community. So when I saw the QCWA stall at the craft fair, I kind of went, okay, yep, I'll sign up for that. I don't have time on a weekday because it's full-time work. My weekends are kind of precious when you've only got 2 days off. It's hard to schedule in something at, say, 10 o'clock in the morning on Saturday.
Yeah, if we didn't have a branch that was open in the evenings, I wouldn't be able to participate. So, yeah, this is great. I can work around it, work full time. But we do also do things on the weekend, but more sort of activities or events. So, yeah, this is just a good chance for everyone to touch base and for us to all kind of do something and stay together.
What is it like being able to mingle and chat to women of all ages? Because I'm here tonight and there's really, like, there's people in their 20s, there's people in their 30s, there's people in their 50s, 60s. What is that like?
Yeah, well, you just get a diverse range of experiences. So I'm a professional, and we've got women going through the same things in their careers here, or women who made it in their careers but are now transitioning, and they're kind of almost like mentors to us. So it's pretty cool.
What do you enjoy most about being involved?
The chance, I guess, to do different activities, to see different things. I feel like particularly as you get older, kind of we all get in these very channeled life phases and styles, and just in a little bit of a rut in terms of you got to work, maybe you do the one activity that you've retained since uni or high school, and that's about it. This is a chance to break out of that a little bit.
I'm Jen Bray. I came to CWA last year, probably around this time. Actually, July was the first meeting. It was Christmas in July meeting, and I just found it to be a group of lovely ladies.
And what do you do in the day?
I'm a teacher. I find that being a working person, many voluntary things happen during the day. So this is, for me, it's an opportunity to meet some other ladies, share some common interests, and yeah, it's one night a month is not hard to manage.
And Jen, what do you get personally out of coming to the meetings?
I've met some fantastic women. That's probably my main reason for coming. Many years ago, I am a home ec teacher, so I met women from the CWA when I judged cookery competitions out in Emerald. So I always probably wanted to be a CWA lady. Now I have my chance.
At just 26, Rachel Tees is one of the youngest members of the Brisbane City Knights branch. She says her friends don't always believe she's a CWA member.
Honestly, they're like, really? Is it really your scene? But no, I think my friends are, when I start to explain it, you know, everything that we actually do at a branch level and how we help the community, and even like my friends are quite interested in craft like myself, so it's really good to have, you know, craft workshops and stuff to go along to.
The women that are coming in tonight, you're helping sign them in and make sure that they're settled. How have you seen the branch grow?
It's actually been quite remarkable. So I joined when there was, say, about 30 members, but every branch meeting I have been to since seems to have grown. Everybody's brought a visitor. We had a visiting day last month, so it's really great. We're starting to get new memberships in every month, so it's great.
How important do you think these evenings, the evening meetings are for people to be able to come along to?
Super important, because we are one of the younger branches, so we all have our day jobs, so we can't come to day meetings, so it's really important to have a night meeting just to have that step away from work and just, you know, sit down, have a cup of tea, listen to a few talks and things, and, you know, just make some friends.
Do the wonderful baked goods help as well, I guess?
Yes, it's my dinner every time.
And where do you hope the branch moves towards, or how do you hope it grows?
I'd like to see it over 60 members, because I think that would make us one of the largest branches in Queensland. And it's really important to have a city presence. So if we're evolving the city, then we're also evolving in the country as well.
Queensland's Sunshine Coast is a mecca for tourists, sipping lattes, a favourite pastime. But the Noosa coffee beans being ground here today are a little bit different. They've been grown, picked, processed and now packed on a farm in nearby Kinkin.
We first bought the property and then sort of looked at different products to possibly grow here. Did a bit of research for a couple of years and thought, coffee sounds good.
Hello, I'm Jennifer Nichols. Tracy and Peter Hinner have established the small boutique Noosa Black coffee brand on their small farm at Kinkin. They sell the beans online and in local shops, tapping into a growing consumer demand for a local homegrown product.
Neither of us are farmers. Peter's in the mining industry and I'm a bookkeeper, but we just thought, yeah, time for a change. So we did.
The Hinners' home overlooks a lush green valley where 5,500 coffee bushes have been planted out on the slopes. You can see the beans ripening to a rich red. They're busy preparing for their fifth harvest.
Normally it's two harvests. You get your first harvest when, say, there's 60% ripe on the tree and you harvest it. And then you know, 6 to 8 weeks later, when the rest of the crop has ripened up, you can do another harvest then.
So the cost of production in Australia must be a lot higher than overseas. How long do you think it's going to take to recoup your money and then start going forwards?
I would give it an estimation of, say, 5 years to recoup the money and then to start making a profit on it.
So this is a long-term game?
Oh, yes, it's definitely long-term, yes. We will eventually both permanently move here. At the moment, it's me and Pete supplements the income for me.
So we're in the shed and we've got bag after bag after bag of coffee.
That's the green bean. That's actually the pea berry. See how it's whole? Very therapeutic to run your fingers through the coffee. We process it here, so we pulp it, take the outer skins off, we demucalise it, take the sticky stuff off, and then we wash it and air dry it on these lovely verandas. It's my drying rack. And then we store it. And when just before I want to roast, I hull it and take the two final little skins off, and then we get it roasted, and then we bag it and sell it.
How much do you like coffee? It was then that Tracy Hinner revealed a secret. She's allergic to drinking too much caffeine. You don't drink coffee.
Don't say that. Do not say that.
You can say that's funny.
No, it's not.
But you must taste. You taste it.
I taste.
You know your coffee. Do you prefer a cup of tea?
Yeah, I prefer tea.
Does Peter like coffee?
Peter drinks coffee. Yes, okay. Definitely. I have learnt to taste the coffee with the different flavours that we've bought. Dan and I have sort of sat down and we've done a cupping on it to taste test and find out how much fruit and sweetness and the flavours in it. So I am learning still on something new. For someone who doesn't drink coffee, the flavours are quite pleasant. I have a light one we call Sunshine, and I specifically wanted a really light, fresh, crisp, sweet one so that you didn't have to add milk or sugar if you didn't want to. And it was for those who really didn't want a heavy coffee at all. The main one is called Wantama, which is a medium roast, rich in caramel, more chocolatey sort of thing. The next one is the pea berry, which is a whole bean where it doesn't split, so it stays whole. When I tasted that was just like a chocolate caramel slice. It was beautiful, and I went, oh, I like that one. The next one we have is called Late Harvest, where we have dried them with the skins on, and it gives you a richer, earthier flavour to that one.
So this has been an incredible learning curve in so many ways.
From the start, we've learnt about agriculture, irrigation, fertilisers, how to get your crops into the best health that you can get it into. And then every year we learn something new with the processing and getting it to the final product. So it's all new. It's great.
Tracy Hinner, who along with her husband Peter have established their Noosa Black Coffee brand on Queensland's Sunshine Coast. Jennifer Nichols brought us that story. Still to come, a cheese-led recovery for the small riverina town of Cooloman, and they're breeding tasty pork chops in tropical North Queensland.
Piggies! 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 We might just go in here.
Hello? Hello?
They're big. They're black, and they have the most enormous ears hanging down in front of their eyes. They're also having the best time wallowing in this muddy pen in front of me.
The large black is a very placid pig. Let's say they love to wallow, they love to sleep. They are just, don't move if it's not necessary.
Hello, I'm Lara Webster. These rare heritage breed large black and Berkshire pigs belong to Christina Delaval. She breeds them on her small farm near Proserpine in tropical North Queensland, selling the ham and pork products at local markets and retail outlets. She's also committed to helping preserve the genetic makeup of these rare breeds as their numbers continue to decline around the world.
The Berkshire pigs are much more active. They're also much more destructive. They love to dig holes and displace rocks and do all sorts of things. The large black and the Berkshire pigs are hundreds and hundreds of years old. They're English pigs. The large black exists in France and Spain as well. In Spain, some of you listeners might know, it's called pata negra, the black foot. They have large ears that almost reach their nose.
Don't see this particular pig, this full-grown large black, she can't even really see too much.
No, she kind of, they kind of shake their heads to kind of get a glimpse of what's going on. They're very, very, very placid.
Why do you believe it's so important to preserve the genetics of these rare pigs?
I think first the eating pleasure of eating real pork and not polystyrene, like the meat you get at the supermarket, is one very important aspect. The second aspect is, it is like with a lot of breeds, be it cattle breeds or pig breeds, that, or even, let's say, old apples, you know, all the heritage tomatoes. It's a pity to lose that gene pool. They produce a wonderful meat, so it would be a pity for them to die out. And at the moment, we have the gene pool is already very small for the large blacks and the Berkshire pigs, because we are down to a few bloodlines.
When we talk about that comparison between your pigs here, these rare pigs, and those standard pigs that we see a lot of today, what has changed in terms of their breeding?
The breeding nowadays in intensive piggeries is, okay, all about the bottom line, which probably is for any farmer. So in an intensive piggery, the piglets get weaned very, very early, which means probably about at 6 weeks. The sow gets back to the boar. Within 4 days, the sow will probably come on heat. She will get served, and in 3 months, 3 weeks and 3 days, she will have the next litter. And the litters of the pink pigs can range from 10 to 16 piglets, which is amazing. So it is mass production compared to the black pigs, the heritage pigs, where I leave them on mum for 2 months so that the piglet has the best start in life, and they have the same time being pregnant, and then normally they produce between 6 and 12 piglets. That's just my personal opinion, and I don't want to go against the intensive farmers, because as I said, it's about the bottom line, but raising the animals according to their species actually produces a beautiful meat.
We've come back up to the house and we've got some pork chops here on the barbecue. There's a bit of sizzling happening. Tell me, how do you cook your pork chops from these large blacks?
I sear them on both sides, then I just let them cook until it's just going pink to grey. Take them off, and then the most important part about meat on the barbecue is actually letting the meat rest. So basically what you have to do, take it off the fire, put it on the plate, and rest it as long as you have cooked it. And then all the muscles and everything will relax, and you will have beautiful meat. The large blacks have a very sweet flavor. Beautiful meat. I mean, I don't meat like sweet in lolly, but just a very sweet flavor. And once you have finished your pork chop, you have a very, very juicy piece of meat.
Riverina used to have a very, very big dairy industry, all the way out past Ardleffen and areas like that. But over the years, that has calmed down, and there's not many dairy farmers left in the area. But I've got a passion for making cheese, I've got a passion for the industry, and I've been doing it most of my life.
It's not something you expect to stumble across in a small town in the Riverina in southern New South Wales. But tucked away in an old disused supermarket building in the main street of Cooloman, a boutique cheese factory is coming to life. Hello, I'm Michael Kavner. Cooloman Cheese is the brainchild of Barry Lillywhite. He hopes his latest cheese-making venture will put Cooloman on the gourmet food map.
We were approached by our local council here, who wanted us to set up this factory here in Cooloman. What they could see is that if you got a tourist destination in the centre of your main street, everyone else in the town is going to benefit from it, and that's what we're hoping is going to happen.
In the Riverina now, there's only a handful of dairy producers. How limited are you in maintaining a regular milk supply for your cheese?
Well, I've been very lucky there. Our local other supermarket here in town is owned by a family called the Jolliffes, and the Jolliffes have a very big connection with the dairy industry, and their son has a dairy farm about a half an hour away from here at Yoburta. And we've got a contract with them to supply us milk, and it is working out really, really well. They have some of the best milk in the Riverina. It is absolutely superb milk to work with.
You go out and collect the milk. Why don't you just get it delivered?
So we can grade the milk before we bring it in, so we know how it's handled all the way. We want a single farm so that we can get to know their milk and get to know the changes through the year, so we can make little changes to the production process, so we can always make high quality cheese, and you can do that out of a single farm. It's absolutely superb milk, and you can taste that in the cheese.
Sharing Barry Lillywhite's passion for cheese is Adam Papperell. Originally from New Zealand, this cheesemaker got his start in the industry after getting an ultimatum from his mum.
My mum said either get a job or go back to school. I needed some bare money at the time. Got a job at the local cheese factory where I grew up. From then on, I just learned from other cheesemakers, from myself, trial and error. And yeah, I'm not qualified at all. I just picked up from other cheesemakers and still learning.
And you first started in Australia making cheese in Queensland. What sort of cheeses were you making there?
They were traditional English-style cheddars, cloth-bound cheddars, red Leicesters, Caffillies, blues, whites, you name it, I made it. Same as what's exciting about Coolerman. We're going to experiment later on down the track with a lot of different flavours, different types of cheeses, ones that I haven't made before, and keen to learn some more flavours and more techniques in cheese making.
What prompts you to come up with a new taste, a new idea for cheese?
Well, it all comes up to trial and error, pretty much. Give a taste out to the public. If they like it, you'll keep making it. If they don't, then you go back to the drawing board and try different flavours, especially with the native flavours. I mean, I've never tried a lemon myrtle cheese before, so it'll be interesting for me as well to trial with these new flavours. So it's all just trial and error.
As Adam mentioned, Coolerman Cheese is using a range of native ingredients to flavour its products. I follow Barry into the cool room where the cheese rounds are maturing. Now we're standing in one of your cool rooms. There's a lovely smell of pine. That's the shells that the different cheeses are resting on. And they're rounds. They're probably the size of dinner plates. And different colours. There's one that's a lovely, rich, deep burgundy. And that's the wax that's actually covering the cheese. And then there's one that you'd almost say is avocado green with deeper speckles of green in them. What are these cheeses?
The one with the purple wax on, that's our native pepper. And the native pepper is a mixture of both the leaf and the berry, plus extra ground up berry put into it. It's a lovely, sweet tasting, peppery cheese. The green one is a native mint, or we call it river mint. The yellowy one up top, that's lemon myrtle. That's probably one of my favourites. When you're making the lemon myrtle, the whole room smells so gorgeous. You just don't want to leave. There's a beautiful lemon essence throughout the whole room from the lemon myrtle. And the one up the top in the terracotta colour, and that's bush tomato.
What's your favourite cheese?
Look, that's a really weird question, because a lot of people ask me that question, and I always say the same thing. It's cheddar. Commodity cheddar you can buy for $6 a kilo. And that's produced by big companies, through big machinery. Our cheese here is very, very different. You can't really compare them, because our cheese, we nurture it from when we go out and pick up that milk, all the way through pumping into our raw milk vat, pasteurising it, and then turning into the cheese. That cheese is nurtured through the whole process, and it's loved through the whole process. I believe all that nurturing and love helps with your final product. It always tastes better than any commercially big produced cheese you can buy. Look, handmade cheese made with love always tastes better.
And what's Adam's preference? Does he agree with his boss? What's your favourite cheese?
Ooh, it depends on what I'm making or what's going right with cheese making. But my favourite cheese overall is probably a really bitey mature cheddar.
And is that both to make or just to taste?
Making, it's probably the blues or the wash rinds I like making. But taste-wise, yeah, definitely like a bitey 18-month-old crumbly cheddar.
I'm a bit partial to a crumbly cheddar myself. Coolerman cheesemaker Adam Papperell ending that report from Michael Kavanagh in the Riverina.